Thank you for joining us, ladies and gentlemen. We are live Saturdays, 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern from Studio M in Los Angeles. I am Stephen Spear, and this is TalkRadio1.com for Saturday, the 9th day of October 2021. My email address, steve@talkradio1.com, steve@talkradioone.com. Okay, I'll admit it, I'm kind of a Disney nut, and it's in particular for the theme parks around the world, Disneyland here in Southern California where I live, and Walt Disney World in Florida. I've been to Disneyland Paris, and I'm very much looking forward, when I can talk Philly into it, to going to the parks in Asia, in Japan and in China, the two in China. So, but I've been to Disney World in Florida 16 times. 1 week from today, I'm going again for my 17th trip. And I've been to Disneyland here in Southern California somewhere between 400 and 500 times since I was born. And so I'm a real fan of their operations, of how well the parks are run, of all the things that are so difficult for them to do, and they do so well. For the most part, they're not perfect. They make some mistakes, but they're so excellent at so many things. And it is a backdrop for raising children. It's a perfect place to have a captive audience of your kids for a day of mini lectures and conversations. And the people who dread the lines have play video games in the lines or look at their phones in the lines have missed the fact that it's a perfect place to have a family conversation that goes on at Disneyland all day long and at Disney World for a week. So I'm excited, a week from today to go. Jim Corcus is an internationally respected Disney historian who has written hundreds of articles and more than 30 books about all things Disney over the last four decades. His original research on Disney history has been used often by the Walt Disney Company and as well as by other organizations, including the Disney Family Museum in San Francisco, which is magnificent, whole different thing. I've done a couple of shows on that, and I'll do a few more. I first met Jim Corcus in 1998 at Walt Disney World in Florida, where he led my entire family on a backstage tour of the Magic Kingdom and Epcot and Disney, at that time Disney MGM Studios, now the Disney Hollywood Studios, and of all sorts of operations there. It's an incredible, it's a city. It's truly a city. It's the size, it's 43 square miles. It's the size of the city and county of San Francisco. It's twice the size of Manhattan, of New York City. And so I am delighted to say, Jim Corcus, for the third time, welcome back to TalkRadio1.com.
Well, thank you so much. But my gosh, 1998, I had more hair and it was darker and I had less stomach. So that brings back memories. And to your point about Disneyland and Walt Disney World, a lot of people think that they're just mirror images of each other. And of course they're not. That Disneyland is a very intimate experience, whereas Magic Kingdom is a spectacular experience because there's so much more area, so much more land. And you are absolutely right about Disney being a wonderful place for children to introduce them to that concept of being nice to other people, of being patient, of treating other people as if they were a VIP, something that we've been sadly lacking during this pandemic. And again, Walt's whole philosophy was that he didn't want to build another amusement park because that was filled with chaos and filth and anger and distractions. He wanted a theme park that told a story, and the story he was telling was, this is a place for every person of the family to enjoy it together, that you wouldn't be separated, that the teenagers wouldn't run off to go on the thrill rides, and the little kids would get in the little boat that only would fit a little kid, this was a place where an entire family could experience it together. So everybody, the granddaughter and the grandfather, can get on Small World and they'll both enjoy it. They may enjoy different things about it. They may enjoy it in a different way, but they'll enjoy it together. And so Walt actually canceled things that would have separated families. You know, originally Mr. Toad's Wild Ride was going to be a roller coaster type ride. And Walt, who was a grandfather when Disneyland opened, realized that there are some people that are not able to be accommodated on that ride. You know, after Walt's passing, now suddenly we're getting rides that you have to be this height in order to ride this ride, or you have to be without these health problems or whatever. But Walt's purpose was, yes, let's get everybody together and give them a chance to talk, give them a chance to once again experience a sense of wonder. In fact, Walt's famous quote was, everybody who comes to Disneyland is only 10 years old. and that is very true. And in fact, that's why we love going. And my gosh, I grew up out in Southern California, and I love Knott's Berry Farm and Universal Studios. And I went to all of those and Marineland. And my gosh, but at Disney, it's different. The moment you step into the park, there's a different feeling. It's not just the attractions. It's not just, you know, oh my gosh, look at the wonderful costumes that the cast members are in and all of that. I hate to say this because it sounds almost mystical, but there's really almost something healing about going into a Disney theme park and even just sitting on a bench and watching people, not rushing immediately to those e-ticket rides or trying to do them, you know, 50 times in one day to try and, you know, get your money back for what it cost you to get into the park. There is something that is just, it really is a park with all that landscaping and all of that. And so, I haven't been to, Tokyo, Disney. I'm looking forward to going there because I've heard nothing but wonderful things and about how it captures the original spirit of Walt's Disneyland, of the cleanliness and approach to quality and service and just capturing that sense of the imagination.
There is something that really does, it really is different at Disney parks than anywhere else. You've written, as I said, over 30 books. We're going to talk about two of them in particular today. And ladies and gentlemen, if you take a look at the talkradio1.com website, you'll see icons for both of these books that we're going to discuss. And you can click there and buy the books if you would like. The first one we'll talk about is Kungaloosh, The Mythic Jungles of Walt Disney World. And jungles of all sorts have been a part of the Disney parks from the very beginning, from the day that Disneyland opened on July 17th, 1955. And I think this is why you've written Kungaloosh. The word jungle in the world of Disney, it can refer to lush vegetation of Africa or India, Asia, South America, or the South Pacific, or for that matter, in the case of Walt Disney World's world of Avatar, an imaginary planet and a different type of a jungle. What did Walt do to inspire all these jungles, and why do they matter?
That is an excellent question, and believe it or not, you are the only person to have ever asked that question of me. Although I am disappointed that you didn't have Adventureland music in the background or the sounds of monkeys or whatever. So I'm just imagining your listeners eating bananas and throwing coconuts while we're talking.
Well, here, I'm wearing a safari hat, so that'll take care
of
it. Well,
that's a good start. And it's called a pith helmet.
Yes.
But anyway, the thing was Walt always had a curiosity about other cultures and other places. And in fact, we see that in his live action short series, The True Life Adventures, where he would send cameramen not just to the United States, but to places like Africa, you know, to film and see this, because he realized that most people had never had a chance to experience this. And when Disneyland was created, he wanted to give these armchair adventurers a chance to experience that. And so even in the Jungle Cruise ride, originally he wanted to have live animals. And they said, well, Walt, that's going to be, you know, a problem, because many of these animals are nocturnal, so guests wouldn't see them. And also the fact that guests wouldn't consistently see them. So one boatload might see the elephant, but the two or three boatloads behind it might not. And Walt always wanted people to have that consistent experience, so they never felt that they were cheated. And the funny story that one Imagineer told me is, said, well, Walt, you know, a tiger can leap, you know, up to 10 feet. And Walt turned to him and said, oh, well, that's not a problem. The boats are only 5 feet away. So he just assumed the tiger would leap over, you know, the Amazon boat. And so actually, the jungles that Walt created were not actual jungles. Bill Evans, who was the landscaper, explained to me, you know, if you go to a real jungle, you might go and walk for days and just see the same vegetation or be sparse or whatever. We just packed everything in tightly. And he said, and we even put in bamboo, which you wouldn't see normally in a jungle, but people think it's something that's from a jungle. And we had to put the canopies over the Jungle Cruise boats so that people couldn't see that the vegetation had grown up yet. So it was going to block people's sight from that. And once we came to Walt Disney World, there's the luxury of space. There's more area. And so,
Let me just say that at Disney World, there are four different theme parks, and one of them is called Disney's Animal Kingdom. And to put this in perspective, Disneyland is about 80 acres before the addition of the Star Wars land, and the Magic Kingdom is larger than that, without about 110 acres, I think it is. But Disney's Animal Kingdom is 500 acres, and somehow they figured out a lot of ways to solve the problem of the animals sleeping during the day, because at Disney's Animal Kingdom in Walt Disney World, you go on a Kilimanjaro safari in a large truck where you can see very well, and you are driving through savannas where you see animals really very up close. So talk for a minute about how they keep the animals from sleeping during the day in a nice way, and how is it those animals that you're seeing don't just leap straight onto the ride vehicles?
Well, they had to negotiate the contract with the animal union, and that took many, many months. What it was, again, Disney doesn't want to force animals to do things. You see that, you know, in some of the, I mentioned Marineland earlier and whatever, you know, sometimes they're forcing animals to, okay, jump when you hear this whistle, or, you know, do this. And so what they did is they studied animal behavior and what can we do to encourage animals, you know, in this area. So sometimes it's food. You know, sometimes those hollow logs that you see are actually fiberglass feeding troughs, which will bring them there. And for instance, the lions really don't like the heat, and lions just like to lie around most of the day. That's where they get the name lion from. But anyway, for the rocks over there, they cool the rocks down, and they also have a spray of water. And so the lions prefer sitting in this on this nice cool rock with a little spray of water coming. Why would they want to move somewhere else? And so they're looking at natural animal behaviors. What can we do? And again, of course, they have to separate, because when you're on that Kilimanjaro safari, you see not only predators, but you see the prey, the potential prey. So there are literally sort of dips, and there are things that you think are blades of grass are actually these sort of little electrical wires. So if you come close to that, you get this little shock, you know, not enough to hurt you, but enough to go, I don't think I want to go that way. And so there are all those things. And also, the area is raised so that while you're in that little jeep, you really can't see the horizon. It's up over. So all those dips and all of that just blur for you. But again, sometimes animals will do what animals will want to do. And so some of your listeners may have been on the Kilimanjaro safari, where the ride vehicle just has to stop to allow things to move in front of it because they want to go where they want to go.
I have been on that ride when that has happened multiple times, where the trucks, these are large trucks that have multiple rows of seating, and you can see very well from any seat. And we have specifically, our family's been stopped on different trips by giraffes, by all sorts of animals, mm-hmm. walking around and walking across the road and stopping, and we just wait until they decide to move before we keep going. Sometimes makes the ride a little bit longer. I understand that it cost almost $1 billion, more than $800 million to build Disney's Animal Kingdom, which opened in 1998, and then at the beginning, before it opened, there were animal rights protesters who thought this would be a zoo. Having been there, I know it's not a zoo. Will you explain why is this not a zoo, besides what you've already told us?
Well, and again, usually at many zoos, or what we commonly think of as a zoo, animals are in a contained space, you know, a cage or an enclosure. Here, one of the reasons that it costs so much money, and one of the reasons why it is so large, and as you mentioned, it's large enough that you could take the entire Magic Kingdom in its parking lot, Epcot in its parking lot, and Disney's Hollywood Studios in its parking lot, and put it smack dab in the middle of Animal Kingdom, and there's still more room. Because there's a backstage area for the animals, and there's the onstage area, and they want to have enough space so that it's they can be free roaming. Elephants love to just, you know, roam, so you need to give them plenty of space for that. They also have the 24/7 veterinary staff that continued to work all through every day of the pandemic. And what they also do is they did some training of the animals. In fact, raising a hand or something would encourage hippos to open their mouth because they felt they were going to get some food. And by doing that, you can check their teeth and take care of their teeth. And also all of the browse that they eat, all of the food, all of the trees and bushes and all of that out there are the healthy stuff, and all of that. Those who have watched Jurassic Park saw that one dinosaur got very, very sick because it ate the wrong bush and ate the wrong berries and all of that. So they're constantly on that. And then backstage, they supplement that diet with you wouldn't believe how much food is prepared every single day just for the animals there for that to be done. So, and again, a lot of zoos, I worked at the Los Angeles Zoo as a tour guide and tram driver there. And when I worked at the LA Zoo, there were some things that I found objectionable. So for instance, if an animal had damaged its horn or whatever, they would kill the animal because they didn't want to, you know, exhibit a damaged animal. Sometimes if the animal was sick, they would put makeup on the animal. I'm sure the LA Zoo doesn't do that these days, and this was decades ago, but a lot of zoos, that was a common practice, just as a lot of things were common practices in those days. These days, Disney is completely dedicated. That's why it was so expensive. They couldn't build the Beastly Kingdom, because all of the money that would have gone to have built that whole section went to the care and the space of the animals there. In fact, for a while, the phrase for Animal Kingdom is not a zoo. So there were commercials where at Animal Kingdom, you'll see this, and it's this, and it's this, and it's this. But one thing it's not is not a zoo.
What was the Beastly Kingdom going to be, and will it ever be built?
To break people's hearts, Beastly Kingdom probably won't be built. The original concept for Animal Kingdom was it was supposed to honor animals who are alive, who are extinct, you know, like the dinosaurs, so you have that dinosaur section, and the mythological animals, unicorns, dragons, things like that. And as the budget kept getting higher and higher, because Disney didn't realize how expensive it was to take care of animals and to take good care of animals, that a section had to be put on hiatus, had to be delayed. And so it came down between Dino Land and Beastly Kingdom. But at the time, Disney was working on a CGI animated feature called Dinosaur. And Eisner was doing that to try and, you know, show Pixar, well, we can do CGI and we can make hits and all of that. And so in order to help promote that, he went with Dino Land instead of Beastly Kingdom. Beastly Kingdom would have been located where Camp Minnie Mickey was, where Pandora, the world of Avatar, is today, and you would have crossed over this troll bridge, and you would have gone into this section where they would have had there was a huge ride that took place in this burned out castle, where you were flying through on a roller coaster, but you were laying flat as you fly through this burned out castle that a dragon has taken over, because you're trying to steal the dragon's gold, and you're maneuvering through this. And of course you confront the largest audio animatronic dragon in the world that breathes fire on you, as this huge climax. There was a maze where you would go through, and you had to solve clues in order to get to the center of the garden, where you would find a real unicorn, or as real as Disney could make it. There was a section where it was Loch Ness, where there was a restaurant, and you would dine, and then periodically this sea serpent would rise out of the water there. And that was just the beginning. And in fact, when Animal Kingdom opened, there were some examples of it still there. They're still today. You'll see in the logo that there was a winged dragon in the logo for Animal Kingdom. In fact, McDonald's released a Happy Meal toy of the dragon, because that was going to be the centerpiece of Beastly Kingdom. And one of the reasons it won't be built is, even though the initial surveys saw that people were excited about Beastly Kingdom and all of these imaginary animals and all this, and they found after Animal Kingdom opened, when they did the survey, people were still excited, but it wouldn't have increased attendance. And so Disney doesn't want to invest money if it's not going to bring in a significant you know, amount of new attendance or repeat attendance for that to happen.
Well,
Joe Rohde,
who's
the Imagineer,
this is as good a time as any to ask you. I know there's a constant discussion as to whether there'll be a fifth theme park at Walt Disney World. There's space for one. Do you think there will be? And if so, why? And if not, why not?
Well, there might. That discussion has been on the board for a lot of times. One of the big discussions was to have a villains park. So it would be all about Disney villains. Originally, it was going to be a section of Magic Kingdom. And Disney got so excited about it, they were going to expand it into an entire park. So instead of a Dumbo ride, you'd have Ursula from Little Mermaid, and her tentacles would be the where you would sit for the ride vehicles to spin around. There'd be a wonderful thrill ride through a fire mountain. You know, based after the mountain in Fantasia. Another plan that they were committed to was, believe it or not, a Legoland, where it would be entirely devoted to Lego structures of classic Disney animated films, like Agrabah from Aladdin. One of the ones that was pitched and went for a while was a Best of Park, which would take the best of rides from Disney parks worldwide and put them in that one park. So you've been to Disneyland Paris. You see that there were some different attractions and some that you probably thought were, boy, I wish that was over here, you know, over in the States. And the same, you know, for Tokyo Disneyland, whatever, put them all in one park, a best of park.
So the thing that has occurred that I'm looking at is why would they or why would they not build a fifth park? And what you said is correct, that they're only going to spend great sums of money if they think they're going to drive additional attendance.
Mm-hmm.
And while that might do that to the fifth park, it might pull some people from the four parks, because when Disneyland was built, it was a good place to go for a day, and the mm-hmm. concept in Florida was maybe people will stay for 4 days or a week, but there is a limit to how much time people can take off of work and how much people can afford, because it's not very inexpensive. In fact, it's very expensive. And so the idea would be, if you put in a fifth park, it might not result in higher attendance, it might result in pulling people from other parks and really not cause people to stay longer. And so that's why I ended up concluding probably 3 or 4 years ago that what they'll do is just expand the existing four theme parks, which is what they're doing, and they're constantly doing that, rather than changing things within them rather than build a fifth park. Do you finally conclude they probably do or don't build a fifth park?
Well, I conclude that they probably won't at this point, exactly for the points that you brought out, because when Animal Kingdom opened, they found that it wasn't generating new attendance. It was pulling attendance from the other parks. Things have balanced out now, but in the beginning, That was the case. Also, Robert Iger has stated that his philosophy is to expand and update and change the existing parks. You know, that's why you're seeing, you know, such major changes happening at Epcot. You're seeing things like Toy Story Land and Pandora and all of that, you know, being added to those existing parks.
And Galaxy's Edge being added at both Disneyland and Disney World. That's the Star Wars land.
Although Galaxy's Edge is an odd duck, because there's an entirely separate Star Wars fandom. So that's why they're also building that Star Wars hotel, that immersive hotel that will be opening next year.
Yes.
Because it's not just Disney fans who want to stay. And boy, that is pricey. We're talking about $3,000 for two days and two nights, $3,000, because they're using the same pricing as for the Disney Cruise Line. And that's just the minimum. You can buy add-ons, like being able to sit at the captain's table.
Yes, of course you can.
And so Disney is constantly putting these add-ons now. Also, remember, yes, you know, you can only take off maybe a week for vacation, but the point Disney goes is we don't want you to see everything in a week. We want you to feel that you missed enough that you have to come back.
Which would be an argument for a fifth park. Now, talk about this immersive Star Wars hotel for a minute. As I understand it, it will be a two-day space voyage where you are, as you said, it's totally immersive, where you're actually on a starship, a Star Cruiser, for 2 days. What do you know about it? What can you tell us?
Sure. They have released some information, so I'm not saying anything that's proprietary, and I never would. I have friends who work at Disney. I used to work at Disney. I respect that, you know. But there are some things out there that we already know. First off, you would drive to a location somewhere behind Disney MGM Studios. You wouldn't go through Disney MGM Studios. There'd be a place behind it, and you would board a transportation pod. And that transportation pod, and this is just a simulator, but we all know that. And you look out the windows and you see things passing and you're going into space. And you're going to the space cruiser named Halicon. And there are rooms. And as I said, the price is $3,000 a person for double occupancy of a room. Rooms can fit up to five people, and the price goes down a little bit the more people you cram into one room. All of your food is taken care of. Again, it's like a cruise line, so it's self-contained. All of your food is taken care of. There's special menu items, more than just blue milk and all of that. There's entertainment by aliens on the ship. There are different sections of the ship that you can explore, and there are characters from Star Wars, like Rey, like Kylo Ren, like the Stormtroopers, like Chewbacca, especially. And one of the reasons they can get away with Chewbacca is Chewbacca is not a face character, so you can have a lot of Chewbaccas out there that you can rotate through, so 24/7 you can have a Chewbacca on the ship there. And depending on how into it you are, because they're encouraging you that if you want to dress up as a Star Wars character, that is perfectly acceptable. And these characters will interact with you, and depending on how much you want to interact, you will be given missions to do by both the bad guys and the good guys. So you can choose for that to happen. Now, as part of that experience, you are going to be able to board another transportation pod and go to Batuu, which is the Galaxy's Edge area. And you'll be able to go through there, and there will be people interacting with you in Batuu that were on the cruiser or are connected with that. And so sometimes there will be like a scavenger hunt you will be doing through Batuu. And you will also get, there's no fast pass anymore, but it,
Genie.
But you get immediate entry into the Millennium Falcon and into Rise of the Resistance. And, So there'll be droids on the ship and all of that. So,
well, this sounds like it's going to be absolutely wonderful, and I obviously am going to want to do that.
But also, it's limited occupancy. I think it's only going to be a little over 100 people
right,
can go
at a time. So that'll be something. I don't want to leave Disney's Animal Kingdom with you and without mentioning a particular ride which stands out in my mind as being the best ride I've ever been on anywhere at any park. It's called Avatar flight of passage, and
right.
you actually fly.
Where you get on a Banshee, and you straddle this device, and you actually feel it breathing between your legs.
It is unbelievable, and it's strange to say this, but you actually believe, you know you're not, but you actually mm-hmm. believe that you are flying yeah. on top of this Banshee, as you would see in the movie Avatar, and it's a nice long ride, a nice experience from the intense. It's not frightening, but you really get the feeling that you are flying and going down and up. It is a combination, for those who know soaring over California at, the, mm-hmm. at Disneyland, that ride system combined with the Star Tours flight simulator ride system combined with elements of the Indiana Jones ride at Disneyland,
mm-hmm.
and all of these together with one of Walt's original concepts of a circle vision theater, but a theater which is so immersive that when you look around, you can't tell that you're looking at a screen because it's so over you, under you, far to the right and left of you, that anywhere you look.
It is so vivid and so realistic, right?
It is so. And the sound and the wind that changes as you change direction, it's breathtaking. You're riding on something that seems... You would describe it as a motorcycle. You're straddling it, but of course you're not. You're straddling this Banshee, this mm-hmm. giant bird. This is a ride which, if you go to Disney World, you must go to Animal Kingdom. You must ride Avatar: Flight of Passage. It's just spectacular.
But again, be careful because it is so realistic that there have been a small handful of guests who have had difficulty on it. Experiencing almost a sense of vertigo, because you know that as you're riding this flying reptile, that you know it'll take these dives,
yes.
these breathtaking dives,
yeah.
and all that, and for a small handful of people, that is almost a little too much. Well, just like. You know, on many of the recent Disney rides, there are elements that are not, you know, 100% for 100% of the people.
No, that's right, and you have to use discretion. And if you're a person who has motion sickness and sensitivity to that, you might not want to ride it. But you know what? You might want to try it anyway and take a chance. It's that spectacular.
you only live once, and again. The Disney cast members, the ride operators there, are trained, so if they see that somebody is having difficulty, they can address that immediately.
Yes, and I'll say something else, and that is one of the things we talked at the top of the show about, the idea that this is a great place for parenting. And I think one of the features of everyone's life is that you experience fear. Some people are afraid, they're nervous when they're about to get married or have children or start a business or mm-hmm. start a new job or apply for a job or ask someone out on a date. And so life is filled with things that can cause you to be fearful. One of the things that I find at Disney parks in particular is useful is teaching how to respond to fear. Fear, courage, and bravery are not present when you're not afraid. It's only mm-hmm. if you're afraid and you move forward, in other words, action in the face of fear, that there's really courage involved. And Disney parks are a great place to teach courage on some of their rides and in some of the simple Fantasyland dark rides that are scary, like Pinocchio or mm-hmm. Snow White's.
Especially for younger kids.
Yes.
Because it's dark, you're hearing sounds coming from all around, and yes.
And things you haven't seen before, and experiences while you're moving in a ride vehicle that's taking you places, and seeing a Wicked Witch and so forth. These are at different levels for different people. They are challenging, and they cause you to stretch emotionally and spiritually. And the result can be that you end up, as you do this, as it's a feature of a child's life, that they feel those feelings of fear and can translate them into feelings of exhilaration and excitement and anticipation, as well as nervousness, it better equips them to make the difficult decisions that we have to make most recently comes to mind, all the decisions people have to make about COVID and how to respond to it and what you're going to do and what you're not going to do. It helps people become better decision makers by allowing them to feel fear and still be able to think clearly. So you bring this to mind, Jim, when you talk about the small handful of people who physically have trouble with flights of passage, and yet I encourage people to take a look and take a chance, not a big chance, and certainly not if you know you're vulnerable and are going to have a problem, but take a chance. I want to
Imagineer John Hench explained it to me as safe fear.
Yes.
You know that Disney is doing everything, and I know this from personal experience, both working there and as a guest, have done everything, you know, to make it the safest possible thing. You're not going to be stuck on a roller coaster hanging upside down for hours, you know. Disney has all these redundancy systems in there. They have all the backups, the whole thing. And John Hench explained to me that when Space Mountain first opened at Disneyland, he saw a group of three grandmothers riding Space Mountain, and he thought, oh my gosh, you know, maybe we better call an ambulance because they don't realize how rough this ride is going to be. And when they came back, one of the grandmothers came out of the ride and fell on the ground and started kissing the ground. And he says, but as the three started to, you know, walk up the exit ramp, they were all just laughing because they had cheated the fear.
Yes, that's exactly right. We took grandson Ethan when he was 4 years old. We took him on Space Mountain. And I can't remember whether it was at Disney World or Disneyland, but we took him on Space. Oh, it was at Disneyland because his parents weren't there. It was just with Philly and me, grandparents. And we prepared Ethan and told him it's dark and it's loud and it's fast. And we talked again and again, it's dark and it's loud and it's fast. And we went on the ride, and when we got off, he was visibly upset. And it turns out, as we discussed it with him and listened to him, he wasn't worried about dark or fast or loud. He thought we were going to get shot because it's themed to Star Wars at that point. And so they're firing lasers, and Ethan thought, I was afraid we'd get shot. We didn't think to prepare him for that aspect.
Right.
But we had told him enough times that everything here is safe. This is a safe place. You can face your fears and so forth. That he was upset. He said, but I knew it was Disneyland, so we probably weren't going to die. So it was a great thing.
Well, and sometimes fear comes from unknown, of not knowing what's going to happen. And so I've seen people do a ride like Tower of Terror and come off, and they were so scared to do it, but then they immediately want to go back on because they know what is happening, so they know, okay.
That's exactly right.
I can live through this, yeah.
We've talked a little bit about Kungaloosh, the mythic jungles.
And again, yes, it's filled with just the jungles of Walt Disney World. So there are references to all of the Indiana Jones things that are at the park, and much more about Animal Kingdom. I interviewed the guy who created the Trader Sam's Tiki Bar, about how that got created and why that's there. And we talk about the Skipper's Canteen and all of that, and the Yeti, you know, and Joe Rohde kept saying, well, yes, there's sort of Beastly Kingdom at Animal Kingdom because we've got the Yeti there, you know. And so there's a lot there. And in fact, for those who are old timers who went to Pleasure Island and saw Adventurers Club, there's the most complete coverage of what was at the Adventurers Club, why it was there, and why it was gone.
It was a fascinating read because I do remember the old Pleasure Island and Adventurers Club, and I really want to get to your other book about the Walt Disney World Resort hotels. But let me just ask you, Why did Pleasure Island get disassembled and replaced? Why? Well, there was a comedy club. There was the Adventurers Club. There were a whole bunch of, there was a discotheque. There were all sorts of nightclubs at Pleasure Island at what was then called Downtown Disney at Disney World. Mm-hmm. It's now been completely replaced and gone. Why?
Okay. And that was because it was a poor business pro forma. The concept was, is you would pay an entrance fee to get into Pleasure Island. And that was the whole point of, with Disneyland and Magic Kingdom and all that, people were saying, Walt, you want to get as many people in as possible. Don't charge them money to get in. If you charge people to get in, you control who's coming in. And also people who have paid money feel they've made an investment, so they're more likely to be on better behavior for a longer period of time, knowing that they could be tossed out and they would have lost what their entrance fee was. The whole point of Pleasure Island was you paid the entrance fee and you went in, and they felt that, oh, yes, you. There were so many different nightclubs. There were so many different areas of entertainment. You go into one for maybe 15, 20 minutes, maybe get a drink, and then you'd go out and you'd go to a – you'd club hop, basically. With Adventurers Club, what they found was people would go in, and they would go in immediately when it opened, and they would stay right until it closed, and during that time, they might nurse just one drink. So you're not covering the overhead for the entertainment. You're not covering the overhead for the maintenance. You're not people are staying there forever, and as a result, it's not letting other people in because you only have a limited number of people in that space.
Got it.
Same thing with, you know, Comedy Warehouse and some of those others. So one of the things Disney did was they got rid of the admission fee. And what happened is now anybody could come in, and now you're starting to see young people go in there and use it as a hangout.
And spend no money at all.
They're not going into the clubs or anything. They're not buying anything. They're just using that as a meeting place. And then suddenly, you're also starting to get some gang activity that was also happening over at Crossroads, which people didn't realize. Disney owned all of Crossroads at one point, which was at the end of Hotel Plaza Boulevard there, the shopping
and restaurant. All right, so let me stop you because I don't want to run out of time. I want to hit this other book of yours. Again, more than 30 books. We've picked two today to talk about. Hidden Treasures of Walt Disney World Resort Hotels. What happened is usually a hotel is a place where you stay and sleep so you can do other things while you went to that place. Mm-hmm. And in 1955, Walt spent $17 million building Disneyland, and he ran out of money or he would have built a hotel himself. But he talked his friend Jack Rather and his wife Bonnie Granville into building the Disneyland Hotel, and he licensed it to them. Mm-hmm. And gave them
99 years
and gave them a real sweetheart deal so that no one else could use the name Disneyland Hotel anywhere in the world except Jack Rather and Bonnie Granville.
Which irritated Michael Eisner when he took over.
Really bothered him. And the Disneyland Hotel in California
was not operated by Disney.
Not owned?
In the beginning, at least, followed the same standards.
It did, but it was not only not operated, it wasn't owned by Disney.
No.
Until 1988, when they finally bought it from Jack and Bonnie's survivors. And an interesting comment was made by Walt Disney's brother, Roy O. Disney, who was the business side. These two brothers, between the two of them, made one complete genius because mm-hmm. Walt had the ideas, and his older brother, 9 years older, Roy, said at one point, "I finally figured out that my business purpose in life was to find the money to fund Walt's dreams." And in 1969, Roy Disney was talking to a group of developers in Orlando in the run-up to Disney mm-hmm. World opening in 1971. It was under construction or getting ready to mm-hmm. be constructed. And he said, and I quote, "One thing I learned from the Disneyland project in California is that to control the environment, you have to control the environment. Without that, we get blamed for things that someone else does," end quote. And so they figured out they had to be in the hotel business because when Disneyland was built, a whole bunch of cheap motels popped up and they were no good. And then the prices doubled and tripled and quadrupled and they kept going up. And then people would come there and have a bad experience.
And blame Disney.
And blame Disney. And so they said, we've got to be in the hotel business. And interestingly, Disney in California, Disney owns three hotels, the Disneyland Hotel, the Grand Californian, and the Paradise Pier Hotel, which it didn't build. So it isn't quite as special or spectacular. The other two are. But at Disney World, they own, is it now 24 resorts and hotels on property?
Actually, I think more coming because the Star Wars hotel that we talked about, there's also a couple of DVC properties that are coming up.
Disney Vacation Club,
a couple of others that are on the planning board. But by 2025, I think there'll be 30.
30. So
Disney will be owning and operating.
And just like when Disney does its Hollywood Studios theme park, it's very different than Universal Studios theme park. The same thing when they do their hotels, they're not in the hotel business. They're an entertainment company running a hotel, so it's different. And DVC that you refer to is Disney Vacation Club, which could be called a Disney timeshare program.
Yes.
And it has some similarities, to be sure, but it's what happens when an entertainment company runs a timeshare. It is so far superior to any other timeshare. I happen to be a member, who would guess? and it is so much better run. It is so much more versatile and flexible and accommodative that it's stunning. So I wanted to just get your sense, give me an overview of Disney hotels and your views of them, and then we'll get more specific in the time that remains.
Well, and again, you know, all of the Disney resort hotels have that same level of quality, of service, of attention to detail, you know. But one of the things that made the Disney hotels different was they were going to be a city within themselves. And not only a city, but they were going to be themed. So just like going to a Disney theme park, going to a Disney resort hotel like the Polynesian, everything is saying the Polynesian. You're seeing nothing that distracts from that story or is chaotic. The costuming, the decoration, the names, the food offerings, the entertainment offerings, and so each of the resort hotels have their own theme, have their own story, and even places like Wilderness Lodge, which is magnificent and was inspired by the National Park. Lodges have authentic antiques in them. It's just basically there are people who come out and just hop to each of the resorts. And during holiday seasons like Christmas, there are different Christmas decorations at each of the resorts that are themed to that particular story, as well as the fact of gingerbread houses and gingerbread structures that are themed just massive structures that are themed just to that particular resort. And so that was one of the things that was going to make the vacation destination of Walt Disney World different, was you could literally spend your time just going to the different resorts, and they have things that are open to everyone.
Yes.
So, for instance, there's movie night at the Art of Animation Resort, where you can go on certain nights, and they project, Disney films, on one of the walls of the resort, and over at Fort Wilderness Resort and Campground. Not only do they have movie nights, but you can buy a s'mores kit and cook s'mores.
Yeah.
to eat while you're watching the movies. And so just as the theme parks are an immersive experience where all five of your senses are being impacted, the same thing is happening at each of the Disney resorts.
We are staying, when we go a week from today, we're staying at the Riviera Resort. I've never been there. It was under construction when I was there in 2018. I've never been on the Skyliner, which is a new gondola transportation.
You'll love it. I talk about fearful. I was fearful the first time I went on that. I went, there's no air conditioning in this, and what if this drops and falls down to the ground? And what? Once I rode it, it was like, what was I thinking of? This is fun. So this is great. What a wonderful place to take pictures, too.
And I'm excited about that. And let me ask you, what should I expect at the Riviera Resort, having not been there?
Well, again, the Riviera Resort is, again, themed to Walt Disney's trip through Europe in 1935. And so you're going to see lots of black and white photos of Walt, you've never seen published anywhere else. There's a bar called the Voyager Bar, and you'll go in and you'll go, gee, but there's just nothing but books here and foreign books. 1935 is when Walt went through and purchased hundreds of books to start the Disney Library at the Disney Studios. So these are reminiscent of those books. That's why they're foreign, even foreign editions of Disney books. And in fact, you'll see Walt's fedora that he wore on the trip, and there's a photo there. You'll see the Charlotte Clark doll, one of which he took with him, you know, on the trip in 1935. So you're going to find a lot of nice little hidden surprises out there. And again, those who are listening, these are fun books, even if you've never been to Disney, because, again, they're just filled with stories. I had a chance to talk to many animators and Imagineers, and so I've recorded the statements that they gave to me over four decades worth of research. And as mentioned, I have over 30 books. And if you're want to hear more stories, just talk to this guy on the podcast here and say, hey, have this guy back and have him talk about all those things Disney didn't build. For instance, in the resort book, I have a whole chapter on all of the resorts that Disney announced they were going to build and didn't build.
And I want to ask you about those, and we will have you on again. I want to do this. What are your upcoming books? Because I'll have you on.
Okay, by the end of October, there will be two books out. One is called the Walt Disney World 50th Anniversary Quizmaster Challenge. Over 250 questions and answers about Walt Disney World. And when I say answers, I'm talking about a paragraph or two paragraphs. Because when people get the answer, I want them to know why it was right or why the other ones were wrong.
And did you say 50th anniversary? Did you say 50th anniversary? You meant 60th?
No, Walt Disney World's 50th. That's what 50th, we're celebrating.
50th, okay, yes. Okay, and then the other book?
And the other book is Vault of Walt, Volume 10. Which has four sections, one with Walt stories talking about how Walt survived the pandemic in 1918, and we almost lost him, and his trips to Hawaii, a whole section on films, including Scarecrow of Romney Marsh and Condor Man, and all of the films that Robin Williams made while at Disney and the difficulties he had at Disney. There are stories about the parks. There's all sorts of miscellaneous stories in there, including the history of Disney postage stamps. So if you've ever been
Disney dollars, and we should talk about that sometime. It's interesting that you're coming out with the Vault of Walt, Volume 10.
Disney got rid of that. Disney keeps getting rid of all of these things.
You have the
Vault. Got rid of the Magic Kingdom Club.
It's interesting that you
have any listeners who are old enough to remember that. My dad was a member of the Magic Kingdom Club, and my gosh, I love that.
So was I. The Vault of Walt Volume 10 is interesting because you were on my show on March 5th, 2011, some 10 and a half years ago, to talk about the original Vault of Walt. Mm-hmm. So that'll be fun.
Well, with an introduction by Diane Disney Miller, who loved the series and supported it. She said, "You know things about my dad that I never knew."
That's beautiful. Well, Jim, I want to say thank you so much for being with me today here
on
TalkRadio1.com. We will do this again. Let me know when those books come out. We'll set it immediately, and we'll have you back on.
And to all your listeners, may all your Disney dreams come true.
Jim, thanks so much.
My pleasure.
Ladies and gentlemen, my guest has been Jim Korkus. The two books, Kungaloosh, the Mythic Jungles of Walt Disney World, and Hidden Treasures of Walt Disney World Resort Hotels. These are both available right here, right now, on the TalkRadio1.com website. Just click on them. You can buy them both. I recommend these books. These are fun. They are filled with stories of all sorts of things that you wouldn't imagine. Now, typically, when I do my preparation for this show, I end up running short of time and end up doing about two-thirds or three-quarters of what I had in mind. And today, I hit about 10% of what I had in mind. One of the things that you'll have an opportunity to hear about when you read these books are stories about Bob Hope and President Richard Nixon and the breakup of the Beatles and a world-famous Dole Whip, all sorts of things that are in these two books. Again, Kungaloosh, the Mythic Jungles of Walt Disney World, and Hidden Treasures of Walt Disney World Resort Hotels. You can buy them both right here, right now. These are not guidebooks. These are not places to get discounts or make reservations or plans or secrets of how to make your way through the park. There are plenty of other things to do that, and I have, by the way, I will be having, within the next few weeks, I'll be having the author and owner of Disney Blogs, and I'm just blanking on her name, but it's going to come back to me. Wolf. It's going to come back to me. AJ Wolf. Thank you. AJ Wolf will be a guest, and we'll be talking about those discounts, but that's not what this is. These books by Jim Korkus deal with the history and the richness and the lessons learned, tracking the changes and things that stay the same in the Disney parks, reflecting things that change and stay the same in America and in the world. This is something which really helps us understand creative genius in our own lives and how we can unlock those things for ourselves. These are books I recommend. Jim Korkus is great. So we'll have him on again. My next show will be 3 weeks from today, because the next two Saturdays I'll be at Walt Disney World. So 3 weeks from today is my next show. My guest will be Andrea Hyatt. She is the author of Thinking Small, The Long Strange Trip of the Volkswagen Beetle. We're going to be talking about some of the bigger themes of transportation in our world, what the design and technology and developments of transportation say about what our concerns are and what our priorities are and what drives us to cover more space or cover space differently, and how we extend our capacities through machines and how that art and design reflect the times. So that shall be something fun at 3 weeks from today, Saturday, October 30, 2021, 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern. Ladies and gentlemen, use our PayPal link, our Amazon link, and our eBay link if you want to support the fine programming here on TalkRadio1.com without costing you anything extra. Join us Tuesday, Mark Germain, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 Eastern, here on TalkRadio1.com. My email address, steve@talkradio1.com, steve@talkradioone.com. Thank you so much for listening today, ladies and gentlemen. I am Stephen Spear. Throughout the country and around the world, this is TalkRadio1.com.